Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. So we will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat or just because they're a Republican and you voted that way your entire life, well, just maybe you were wrong, because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there that are working for your benefits, and we're going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them speak. We're going to let you ask them questions. We're also going to be discussing the education system, the military, science, sports, music, the movies. Ah, yes, healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Is your 26-year-old still on the family's health care plan? Or as the Progressive Party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word in everything. From the cities, the counties, the state, the nation, the entire world. So sit down. Get a pencil, paper, and take a graduate education experience, and we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
Well, there's the weather, of course, when it's in season.
Now, Marce, I need some ideas if I'm going to get your town out of the serious trouble it's in.
River City ain't in any trouble.
Well, then I have to create some. Must create a desperate need in your town for a boys' band. So why does everybody keep rubbering into the billiard parlor?
Oh, they just got in a new pool table.
They must have seen a pool table before.
No, just billiards.
That'll do it. You just sit where you are, and remember, if you see that music teacher...
Are you Mr. Dunlop?
Yeah? Well, either you're closing your eyes to a situation you do not wish to acknowledge, or you are not aware of the caliber of disaster indicated by the presence of a pool table in your community. Well, you got trouble, my friend. Right here, I say trouble right here in River City. Why, sure, I'm a billiard player. Certainly mighty proud to say I'm always mighty proud to say it. I consider that the hours I spend with a cue in my hand are golden. Help me cultivate horse sense and a cool head and a keen eye. Did you ever take and try to give an ironclad leave to yourself from a three-rail billiard shot? But just as I say it takes judgment, brains, and maturity to score in a bop-line game, I say that any boob can take and shove a ball in a pocket. And I call that sloth the first big step on the road to the depths of degradation. I say first, medicinal wine from a teaspoon, then beer from a bottle. And the next thing you know, your son is playing for money in a pinchback suit. And listening to some big out-of-town Jasper, hearing him tell about horse race gambling. Not a wholesome trotting race, no, but a race where they set down right on the horse. Like to see some stuck-up jockey boy setting on Dan Patch? Make your blood boil, well, I should say. Now, friends, let me tell you what I mean. You got one, two, three, four, five, six pockets in a table. Pockets that mark the difference between a gentleman and a bum, with a capital B, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. And all week long, you're River City youth will be frittering away. I say your young men will be frittering. Frittering away there noontime, supper time, chore time too. Get the ball in the pocket. Never mind getting dandelions pulled or the screen door patched or the beefsteak pounded. Never mind pumping any water till your parents are caught with a cistern empty on a Saturday night, and that's trouble. Yes, you got lots and lots of trouble. I'm thinking of the kids in the Knickerbocker, shirt-tail young ones, peeking in the pool hall window after school. You got trouble, folks, right here in River City. Trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. Now, I know all you folks are the right kind of parents. I'm going to be perfectly frank. Would you like to know what kind of conversation goes on while they're loafing around that hall? They were trying out Bevo, trying out Cubabs, trying out TaylorMades like cigarette fiends, and bragging all about how they're going to cover up a telltale breath with Sansan one fine night. They leave the pool hall, heading for the dance at the armory, libertine men and scarlet women, and ragtime, shameless music that'll grab your son, your daughter, with the arms of a jungle, animal instinct, mass hysteria. Friends, the idle brain is the devil's playground. Trouble!
Oh, yes, oh.
Right here in River City.
Right
with a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
We
surely got trouble. Right here in River City. Got to figure out a way to keep the young ones moral after school. Mothers of River City, heed that warning before it's too late. Watch for the telltale signs of corruption. The minute your son leaves the house, does he rebuckle his knickerbockers below the knee? Is there a nicotine stain on his index finger? A dime novel hidden in the corn crib? Is he starting to memorize jokes from Cap'n Billy's whiz bang? Are certain words creeping into his conversation? Words like swell. Aha, and so's your old man. But if so, my friends, you got trouble. Right here in River City. With a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. We've surely got trouble. Right here in River City. Remember the main Plymouth Rock and the Golden Rule. Oh, we got trouble. We're in terrible, terrible trouble. That game with the 15 numbered balls is the devil's tool.
Devil's tool.
Oh, yes, we got trouble, trouble, trouble.
Oh, yes, we got trouble. Big trouble.
With a T.
With a capital T.
Gonna rhyme it with P.
That rhymes with P.
It stands for pool.
That stands for.
Remember, my friends, listen to me because I passed this way but once. All right, that's here, right here in River City. We got trouble. Well, not here in Charlotte, North Carolina, but there's trouble right there in Wisconsin. Yes, sir. Now, as the music man says, man starts buckling up his knickerbockers, his shoes, all the way up to the top. You know there's a problem. This man, Rittenhouse, had more than 5 counts against him. And they agreed on all 5 counts. Well, hey, that's the way it is. But don't tell me the next time someone walks around with an AR-15 or a Smith & Wesson or a Glock at a protest and shoot somebody, it ain't self-defense. Don't tell me that. I don't want to hear that, because that's what's going to happen. He has given the legal right now for people to walk around with guns and go out to a private protest, maybe not even in their own state, crossing state lines. And this is anybody. You don't even have to be aged to have that gun. It's going to be okay, because this judge said it was okay. Now, he wasn't one of the jurors, but the way he directed them
tells you what the hell the story was. Now, I don't believe that the prosecutors, if you watched the whole thing every single day it was on, which I didn't, but the times I saw it, I don't think the prosecutors were helping their case. Now, you got a man on tape shooting people. You got a man on tape that said, someone grabbed this man, grabbed my gun, so I had to shoot him. You clearly, clearly see it on tape. That ain't what happened. That ain't what happened. Well, we have to see what happened, because we're going to see what happened. And you know, this is Friday. Screwed up my whole daggone presentation, as usual, that I was going to have on Friday. I was up to 3:30 this morning because I couldn't get the internet. The internet was down. I couldn't transcribe the stuff that I wanted back onto my presentation this morning. I had to stay up and wait and wait and wait. I'm telling you, we got a call here. Let me ask this caller before I go on anymore. Hello, caller. Who's this? Hello, caller. You just want to listen or 1471? You want to just listen? Okay, that's all right. You can listen. I'll come back to you. You're probably away from your phone. You just got your phone on. Okay, I will come back to you. 1471. Okay, now, this is what I want the 1471, 206 1471. When you call me back, I will get back to you in a few minutes here. I just want to get to a position here where I had to reshuffle my whole show today because of this written out verdict. I mean, give me a break. You screwed up everything to me. And I'm hoping that I can get some of this stuff up. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Nope, that wasn't it. That wasn't it. Okay. I just want to hear you. This is how it sounded about 2 hours ago when it first came up.
The defendant will rise, face the jury, and hearken to its verdicts.
Richard McGinnis, we the jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty. As to the third count of the information, unknown male, we the jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty. As to the fourth count of the information, Anthony Huber, we the jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty. As to the fifth count of the information, Gage Grosskreutz, we the jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty.
Members of the jury, these are your unanimous verdicts. Is there anyone who does not agree with the verdict as read? Would you wait the jury poll?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, folks, your job is done, and we started just about 3 weeks ago, and I told you it could last 2 weeks and 2 days. This is 3 weeks. You were a wonderful jury to work with. You were punctual. You were attentive. And the forgotten sixth over here, who had a very difficult job of keeping from discussing the case during the time that they were sequestered as well. All of you, I couldn't have asked for a better jury to work with. And it has truly been my pleasure. Without commenting on your verdict, the verdicts themselves, just in terms of your the attentiveness and the cooperation that you gave to us, justifies the confidence that the founders of our country placed in you. So I dismiss you at this time. You're never under any obligation to discuss any aspect of this case with anyone. You're welcome to do so as little or as much as you want. The media have requested, a number of media sources have requested the ability to talk to you, and they have been allowed to present the presentations to you that you'll get in writing, and it's entirely up to you whether you want to contact them. They are not to contact you. If anyone does contact you and just you tell them you're not interested in discussing it, if that's the case, and if anyone persists in doing so, report that to us and it will be addressed, I assure you. At the beginning of the trial, there was some concern about information and your safety, and I assure you that we will take every measure to ensure that that is your concerns are addressed and respected. I'm going to talk to you for just a minute, not about anything to do with the case, but just about that sole issue. And you, as they say, you're welcome to discuss the case as little or as much as you want. Any questions, anybody? Thank you so much. And you're after 4 years, you're eligible for service again. It would be my pleasure to work with you. Thank you. Yeah, please. Or in the library. They can chill in the library. It's not going to be more than a minute. Or maybe it will be. Take them upstairs. That's fine. That's fine.
Shaquille Brewster, there it is. Not guilty on all five counts. We saw Kyle Rittenhouse's reaction. Not surprising, considering I think what he, I'm sure he was thinking about what he could be facing.
Okay, so we saw what we heard what how it was presented to the public, and let's see what is 1471 still available. He or she just hung up. Okay. Now, that's how it was read out. Wasn't guilty on any counts. Now, why did it take so long? In one aspect, we are glad that it took a long time, because maybe they went through every single charge and hacked it out. Maybe there were one or two or three people who did not find or like these charges. Or maybe there was nine people who did not like the charges. It doesn't matter, though, because this is the way it ended. Now, I want to also present you with how the MP Daly presented these charges. And we have people on there like Joyce Vance, former prosecutor, federal prosecutor. Danny Savalas, also a prosecutor. Danny Henderson, also a prosecutor. Danny Henderson is now a defense attorney, and so is Danny Savalas. Just listen how they approach this.
And he obviously has quite an emotional...
All right, we're here. I don't know what happened. I don't know. Oh,
you know, I'm not sure that that's the issue here. The prosecution's real problem...
happen. So hold on for a minute and let's see how it presentation stopped. Let me reset it.
It's about right and wrong, and he says, in spite okay. of the verdict, we know what we saw. So there's that frustration there. There will be that reaction that we have there. And, there are many people who have been anticipating this verdict, and this verdict has now come, and it results in the acquittal of Kyle Rittenhouse.
Check, stick around. I got Joyce Vance and Danny Sabalos with me. Joyce Vance, a former prosecutor. Danny Sabalos, a longtime defense attorney. Joyce, was this a well-defended case or a poorly prosecuted case or a little bit of both?
You know, there was some of everything not to like in this case, from the way the judge conducted it to some of the strategic decisions the prosecution made. The defense, as we say, was good enough. And the key point of the defense was arguing self-defense. As a former prosecutor, this strikes me as an odd situation for self-defense. It's something akin to saying that if you go into a bank and rob it and people are trying to apprehend you, you can then shoot your way out and claim self-defense. You know, that's a little bit of what Kyle Rittenhouse did. He created this problem, and then he proceeded to threaten people to get out. Typically, you can't claim self-defense in a situation where you provoked the incident. But the defense did a good enough job here of convincing jurors this was a unanimous verdict on all counts. This jury was thoroughly convinced.
Danny, I would, same question to you. Was this an easy defense, poor prosecution, friendly judge, tough? What's your sense?
There is no such thing as an easy defense. And it's not so much that it was a poor prosecution, but really poor facts for the prosecution. In Wisconsin, the prosecution had to disprove self-defense, all the elements, or any one of them, beyond a reasonable doubt, in addition to proving their case. Now, at the last minute, they almost snatched victory from the jaws of defeat when they got the provocation instruction, because that could completely upend the self-defense defense. But to win on prosecution, they needed to convince a jury that to initiate that confrontation with Joseph Rosenbaum, that Kyle Rittenhouse was the one who started it. And the only evidence they ever had of that was this grainy, pixelated video imagery that showed up mid-trial. And as the defense correctly pointed out, provocation was so important to the prosecution that they mentioned it in their opening statement 0.0 times. So here the prosecution, really, it can't be said that they weren't aggressive. In fact, it's their aggressiveness that almost got them in a lot of trouble. They almost crossed several different lines. So in this case, prosecution did their best, but they didn't have particularly good facts. The defense did a very good job, because an acquittal on all counts is a good job no matter how you paint it.
You know, Joyce, it seems so that on the charges they brought, you know, if you just they didn't have that charge that possibly, and we're not going to know until we get an idea of where the jurors' heads were, right? But you could just see it in the way various people would react to this trial, which was, what was he doing there? Gosh, why would that happen? At the same time, did they miss out? Should they have found another lesser charge to put in there that would have been an easier case to prove?
You know, I'm not sure that that's the issue here. The prosecution's real problems began when one of their key witnesses, the victim who survived, took the witness stand, and he essentially on cross-examination conceded self-defense, talked about the fact that there was a gun in his hand. The prosecution tried to argue their way out of that situation, mm-hmm. but I think the die was cast in a significant way at that point.
And Danny, now obviously it looks like putting Kyle Rittenhouse on the stand was a great move. Did they need to do it?
It's so easy now to say, oh, brilliant move, and I will jump right in and say, yes, it was. Why? Because there was an acquittal. Arguably, they didn't need it because there was so much video evidence they could have rested on the prosecution's burden, but at the same time, it was a gambit that is rarely taken. Don't be fooled by the Ahmaud Arbery, the fact that we've seen two defendants testify in about a week. This is a very rare occurrence, but in this case, it didn't hurt them. Obviously, we measure it by the fact that there was was an acquittal. Could they have gotten to that same place without him testifying? Yes, I believe so. This is not a case where it was desperation. We got to put up our client or else we got nothing. They had stuff, the defense. They made a strategic decision that the jury might identify with Kyle Rittenhouse. Maybe they were right. We may find out in the coming days. But for now, an acquittal is a win, however you take it.
Joyce, how do you feel about cameras in the courtroom?
I think we absolutely need to have more of it. The important thing about our criminal justice system is it only works if people have confidence in it. And we only fix problems if people are aware of them. So a big part of the country has been engaged in a significant number of criminal trials in the last year. And that's because they've become more available through court mechanisms during COVID. State courts do a lot better job in this area than the federal courts do, and I think it's time for the federal courts to follow the state court's lead.
Danny, same question to you. I mean, I sit there, there's part of me that loves the transparency, and there's part of me that wonders, is it good for the country to have 330 million backseat lawyers and backseat judges?
I'm with Joyce on this one. I mean, the courts are supposed to be public. Now, when we first came up with that concept of the courts being open to the public, all you had to communicate was, you know, a scroll, maybe a pen that looked like a feather, and somebody shouting in the town square. It just so happens that technology has advanced to the point where we can live stream everything anytime, anywhere from the comfort of our phone. So with the idea that the court should still be public, I don't think anything has changed just because technology has moved on from the time of the framers. So I'm with Joyce. I think cameras in the courtroom are a good thing. Does it mean that attorneys sometimes play up to an audience instead of the way they should to the courtroom? Maybe.
Right.
But here I think the benefits outweigh the burdens.
Let me bring in David Henderson, a civil rights attorney here. And David, to the family of the dead victims here, what's your next do you have another place to go? What does Mr. Huber's and Mr. Rosenbaum's family go? Do they go to a civil suit? Is it against the city? Is it against Mr. Rittenhouse? What do they have another avenue here for justice in their minds?
Chuck, I think the way I need to answer that question is to tell you what I would tell them if they walked into my office. If they walked into my office, I would tell them no. Is it possible that you can find a lawyer to file a civil suit against Kyle Rittenhouse? Sure it is. I don't think that that would be an effective lawsuit. I think it would just lead to more frustration. This goes back to something you stressed earlier when I was first joining, and that is it does represent a failure on the part of the prosecution. And I don't like to say negative things about other lawyers unless I have to. But here, as a former special crimes prosecutor, you've got laws to ensure certain protections and rights for the victims of violent crimes, and that extends to family members. If they feel dissatisfied with the prosecution, part of what you ultimately have to look at is the fact that those prosecutors did not reassure them that they were going to do their best to make sure justice was served. And that doesn't mean you get a guilty verdict. That just means that you help the family understand that you did everything you could in the courtroom, because that's the only way that people can get closure under circumstances like this.
Well, backseat drive a little bit. What would you have done differently? Obviously, you think the prosecution didn't deal with the families very well. What would you have done differently in the courtroom?
So, Chuck, let's start off by saying this. Wisconsin doesn't have what you'd call a true manslaughter statute. They've just got different versions of murder charges. Some people think their equivalent of manslaughter is effectively second-degree intentional homicide. I would argue it's their version of third-degree reckless homicide. With that in mind, if I were to just ask the question, the first shooting that Kyle Rittenhouse committed, what do you think it is, a murder or a manslaughter? Almost everyone I pose that question to says, it's murder, of course. Look at the way they presented the case. It's not. They essentially charged him with manslaughter based on that first crime, and then murder based on the second person that he shot, the young man who tried to stop him by hitting him with a skateboard. That makes for a very disconnected case in terms of the way that you outlay your facts during the presentation of evidence. It makes it extremely confusing for the jury when they go back there and they deliberate. A more effective approach would have been to charge Rittenhouse with second-degree intentional homicide for all of the shootings that he committed and the attempt. It makes it easier for you to present evidence and then move into your argument during jury deliberations. Also, the jury was not given any instruction about how to actually work through this charge, which is critical when you want them to reach a conviction. Part of what's not intuitive as a trial lawyer is that to be effective, you have to be a teacher. You have to teach the jury what the law is, and you have to lay out how they're supposed to follow that law during the course of the trial. Part of what we saw here is a fundamental lack of understanding about how you tell a story in the context of a criminal trial. And if I had to put it on one thing, that's ultimately where the prosecution failed here.
You know, the judge was mercurial, and I want to get all of your opinions on this. Joyce Vance, knowing that, and I would argue that the people that should have known the most about this judge's habits, shall we call them, are the folks in Kenosha. I have to tell you, in my observation, Joyce, it seems as if the prosecution seemed to be surprised by some of the judge's actions. The more I read about this judge, they shouldn't have been. Did they mishandle it?
One of the things you know as the prosecution is that you don't get a second shot at the trial. If you get an acquittal like prosecutors did here, the prosecution doesn't get to take an appeal and ask the court to reverse the trial judge for misconduct. Your only shot is in that first trial. So for prosecutors to not have anticipated that this judge would pull some of the antics that he's infamous for locally is likely a misstep. They did look surprised at times. And we've talked a little bit, Danny mentioned this real misstep prosecutors made, where during cross-examination of the defendant, they straight out of the box dangerously veered towards commenting on the defendant's failure to speak with police when he was in custody early on. This gave the judge the opportunity to go full bore on them. It likely created some bad impressions with the jury. Their handling of the judge throughout was problematic.
Danny, you know, it did, obviously, when you're a defense lawyer and you see that the prosecution's in the judge's crosshairs, you just stay out of the way, I assume.
Well, yeah, but 90% of the time, I mean, maybe this is just the defense attorney in me. If anyone thought that the judge was biased against the prosecution, it feels like to me it's 90% of the time the other way. But again, I'm biased. And, you know, it may be true that in federal court, you don't see this kind of behavior from a judge. But let's face it, you know, when you get to state court and judges are elected, I know there are defense attorneys and local DAs out there who are watching this saying, yeah, you think that judge was crazy? You should see so-and-so in part whatever. That guy is out of his mind. When you have elected judges, you get a lot more random folks who end up on the bench. You get a lot of good jurists, but you get a lot of very interesting folks who end up there. Eccentricities? Absolutely. Was this judge someone who would likely that you would likely find at the Supreme Courthouse? No. But is he someone that you might see in a state courthouse or a municipal courthouse on a random Tuesday? Absolutely. These judges are out there.
Look, one of the things that I can't explain in our democracy is how you can have a judge face the voters. I don't get it, but that's me. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know how you could expect a judge to be impartial if they have to face voters and win election or re-election. David Henderson, how would you manage this judge?
You know, I agree with what both Joyce and Danny are saying. When you're in court, you have to play the hand that you're dealt. And if getting a good judge is what justice depends on, we're in trouble when it comes to state court. 90% of the time, they would be yelling at the defense, not at the prosecution. Most of the time, that's true. In a case like this, the roles are often reversed. And so I think a fundamental aspect of managing this judge was managing the presentation of the evidence. I thought the state went down roads they didn't need to and should not have with regard to making this case more politically charged than it needed to be. This should have been a theme based primarily on safety. The message should have been, hey, folks, look, despite all the background noise here, all we're trying to do is keep people safe. And you can't keep people safe when you've got somebody running around shooting people and putting other people at risk. That's what we are focused on. And I don't care what your politics are. You've got to admit that having two people shot and killed at a protest and a third person nearly shot and all the people that were placed in harm's way is something that we can't take for granted. And that's what justice is. And I think that if you do that, it helps you manage the judge because the things that set the judge off had more to do with the politics underlying the way this case was tried. I'm not saying it would have been perfect, but you could have avoided a lot of it.
Shaquille Brewster with that for us. Shaq, thank you. You know, Joyce Vance, this is the uncomfortable. The Hoover statement brings up something uncomfortable. Two people died. Another one near almost died. And nobody's paying any penalty. Now, some could argue that the trial itself was a form of penalty for Mr. Rittenhouse and the near, you know, what was facing him. But how does the Huber family get closure? I don't know if they ever will.
You know, it's a really difficult issue, and I'll speak to it personally because my father-in-law, who was a federal judge, was murdered because of his judicial service, and ultimately the man who was responsible for killing him was convicted at trial in both state and federal settings. And that fact of conviction does give families an enormous amount of closure, and something that I've always been very acutely aware of as a prosecutor is that there are a number of things that are important to victims, but among them is learning the truth and having people accept responsibility and be held accountable. And so in this setting, where yes, to some extent, the family does know the truth and they've been able, in some cases, to see video as grainy as it is, yet the notion that Kyle Rittenhouse, who, for instance, when he was released pre-trial, hung out with members of the Proud Boys and flashed white power signs, and now will not face any form of accountability for his acts, that's extraordinarily difficult for family members. One of the goals of our system has to be restorative justice, helping everyone involved in these situations, from defendants, perpetrators, to family members and victims, find a path forward. And this trial in Kenosha, Wisconsin, has not done that for the families of the victims and the victims themselves.
Yeah, David Henderson, essentially, and you talked about this earlier, this should have been presented by the prosecution as a failure in public safety and should have been focused on public safety. The state failed. The state failed to create an environment that was safe. The state failed to prove who did make that period unsafe. And now we're in no man's land here as a society where nobody's going to pay a price for these two dead Americans.
That's right, Chuck. And if there's a responsibility that lawyers have here, and I know people would laugh at this because it seems like our profession is so far away from this at this point, but part of what we have a responsibility to do, and this is especially true when you're a prosecutor, is help people heal. And so building on what Joyce was just saying, one of the things that I did when I was in special crimes is I would always tell people, look, I cannot promise you an outcome, and any lawyer who says they can is lying to you. But what I hope I can promise you is that when you look back, you won't feel like you could have had a smarter lawyer who fought harder for you. In the same way we make that promise to individuals, we need to make that promise to the country that we represent, and that is by letting them see the arguments that we make in court and how they can lead to healing for our society. We're at a point where we are bursting at the seams, and if we don't start doing more of that, I'm afraid of where things may go. And so the argument that I'm making with regard to public safety stems from that context, just the need to help restore our society to a point where people have hope for the future and being able to come together better as a country.
Yeah. Joyce, the public safety umbrella might be the best way to change some of this conversation on the Second Amendment.
Well, I think David makes a really excellent point here that this case should have always been about public safety, and what the jury should have been considering from opening statement, maybe from voir dire when they were selected onward, was how they would have felt if they were in that crowd with Kyle Rittenhouse free to stalk through the crowd with his gun in hand and then claim self-defense for whatever he did. Because that narrative was absent here, I think that much of the outcome that we saw today was attributable to that failure of narrative by the prosecution. And this is an important conversation to have nationwide as we think about not just healing communities, but making them safer, preparing them for the next incident, because there will be more protests. There will obviously be more Kyle Rittenhouses out in these crowds. The question that we now have to face is, are we safer after this verdict? Are we safe if we let someone like Kyle Rittenhouse kill people and then claim self-defense? Do we need better laws that protect us better? And the answer is clearly yes today.
I have to tell you, and to listen to the way Joyce just framed that, David, when she said, are we safer today? It's pretty obvious to me, more people, the next time there's a protest of some sort, and it may get politicized, that gun owners with a certain ideology may feel incentivized now, may feel even emboldened. And that does seem to be an uncomfortable message that may be received by some.
I think that's the obvious message that you take away from this, Chuck. I always try to look for the silver lining when I can, but here, let's think about what happened. A kid had an AR-15 strapped to his body, and he argued that on the theory that I may face lethal force in the future, because a person may, who never touched him, get his hands on my gun and wrestle it away, and then once he's wrestled away, turn and kill me, based on that theory of a potential fear in the future, the jury found that he was justified in shooting and killing someone in the present. And so I think that, yes, if you take your gun to a protest in the future or any heated situation, I think you're inclined to feel that you're within your rights to use it, and that's very dangerous for all of us.
Very dangerous to all of us. Damn right it is. As I was saying, you wait till the next protest comes down the bike. If you don't think that the next protest is going to be something else, you got a problem. You got a real problem, because it will be something else. It will be something else. The next protest is going to be a big problem for anybody who's out there. Because the man that's carrying the AR-15 or the Smith & Wesson or the Glock is going to be in their rights to shoot your ass if he sees you. Because all he has to say is, I was scared. I was scared that they were going to get me. That's all. It's a shame. It really is a shame. But, hey, what are we to say? What are we to say about anybody that has an AR-15? What are we to say about them? This is a peaceful rally. Get your AR-15 and yourself home. You're shot dead. He came at me. He talked to me nasty. Okay. Very good. Okay. Well, that's Carl Rittenhouse, and that's the story today. Screwed up my whole daggone organization for today's works, but hey, what am I to say? Let's turn the page a little bit, just a little bit, and let's talk about some other people that think it's okay to do what the hell they please. Nicole Wallace was talking about the GOP yesterday. And they give her the idea, well, hey, why can't you and kill another congressman if you're a congresswoman, man? Why can't you stab anybody that's in Congress that you don't like, that you don't agree with? And laugh it off after. I was only kidding. Yeah, you're only kidding, all right. Paul Gozar. He was only kidding.
Hi there, everyone. At 4 o'clock in New York, the permission structure, you know, in terms of what is politically viable and politically acceptable for each of the two political parties in the United States of America, has never, ever diverged so dramatically. On the right, there is a green light now from the most senior Republican leader in the House to widely circulate violent content depicting the murder of a Democratic colleague. Also on the right, there's severe punishment now for the crime of governing. But on the left, it is a completely different picture, a truly alternative reality. So intense, The Democrats' desire to produce big transformative change for the voters, the Democrats can appear from the outside completely consumed by policy differences. Democrats, so scarred by 4 years of norm busting on the other side of the aisle and devoted to restoring our institutions, can seem paralyzed around questions like blowing up the filibuster to enact their agenda, out of fear of what Republicans will do if they regain control. This wide and widening gulf between how each party functions has produced a split-screen moment in American politics that is unprecedented. On the Republican side, there is fallout today from the censure of Arizona Congressman Paul Gosar. Gosar posted a video depicting the murder of his Democratic colleague, Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. After Ted Cruz went on Fox News to accuse Liz Cheney, who was one of just two Republicans to vote for Gosar's censure, of having, quote, Trump derangement syndrome, Cheney hit back and hard. It's a response that cuts right to the major problem within the Republican Party right now, that it is completely beholden to the disgraced ex-president. Listen.
I think that Trump broke Ted Cruz. Ted used to say he was a constitutional conservative, but now he is like so desperate for political approval that he will even advocate, suggest secession. I think that a real man would be defending his wife and his father and the Constitution.
We're at the real man stage of the Republican demise. Cheney there referencing, though, that brutal and deeply personal set of attacks that were lobbed by then-candidate Donald Trump against Ted Cruz. And Ted Cruz, just like the rest of the Republican Party, completely capitulated to Donald Trump and his whims. Remember this?
He'll say whatever he wants to say. I actually think he's a very unstable person. His father was with Lee Harvey Oswald prior to Oswald's being, shot. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous.
Add to this the nasty attacks by Trump on Ted Cruz's wife, the person he's married to. You'd think any one of those attacks would be disqualifying when it comes to going on to earn one's political support, but not for Ted Cruz. Instead, Ted Cruz today is one of the ex-president's biggest boosters, and his party, hostage to Donald Trump and his delusions of a stolen election, is forced to twist itself into knots to defend the most extreme Trump allies, people like Paul Gosar, who remained so unrepentant about what he did that he retweeted that violent video that got him censured after the censure motion passed the House. Here's how the Washington Post's Aaron Blake describes McCarthy's defense of Gosar. What McCarthy did focus on was how much Democrats might rue the day. McCarthy said the vote would mean members in influential positions would need the permission of a majority to keep those positions in the future. Even as no Democrats have targeted their colleagues with similarly or even metaphorical violent imagery. McCarthy wasn't the only one to preview something so ominous Wednesday, nor was it the only time GOP leaders have wielded threats about what would happen if Republicans regain the majority. Indeed, this has become a growing mainstay of the GOP pushback on Democratic majorities this year. When Republicans are in the majority, where's that going to end? Representative Chip Roy said. Here's what Speaker Pelosi had to say today about those threats by Republicans that they would seek payback.
Is the inference that I draw from your question that we should have not censured Mr. Gosar for his shameful behavior for fear of something the Republicans might do in the unlikely case that they might win?
With you in about
I don't expect that that's the case, and I'm doing everything in my power to make sure it isn't, not just because of Gosar, but because of our democracy, which they are undermining every single day. And you see their behavior on the floor says they shouldn't have a gavel be anywhere near them ever.
She has a point. All this happening as Pelosi and the Democrats are doing what they do best, what they believe they were sent to do, govern. House today moving forward with a sweeping and potentially historic bill that is the centerpiece of the Biden agenda, a roughly $2 trillion package intended to address the climate crisis and the country's safety net. The Speaker announcing this morning that a vote could take place as soon as today. Democrats advancing their agenda as Republicans accommodate the most extreme members within their party. It's where we start this hour. Washington Post White House Bureau Chief and MSNBC contributor Ashley Parker is here. Also joining us, Jackie Alemany, Washington Post congressional correspondent and author of the Early 202 newsletter, and former top State Department official and MSNBC political analyst Rick Sengel is here. Let's stick a pin in the Cheney-Cruz sort of clash of the Titan and Ted Cruz, and go to the Biden agenda. Jackie, what is the latest?
We are currently in the House right now waiting on whether or not the House Democrats are going to vote on the Build Back Better resolution, whether that's going to get pushed through, and they're going to all be able to go home for the holidays having accomplished something. But as you've noted, there are two parallel realities, universes going on here right now while we are scrambling to ask Democrats about whether or not, especially those six moderate Democrats who were potentially holding out as they were waiting for the CBO score, and whether or not the estimates lined up with what the Biden White House had previously estimated with regard to the $1.7 trillion infrastructure package. We've also been scrambling to ask Republicans dramatically different questions. It's been quite disorienting, actually, asking about CBO scoring to then rushing to ask Republicans about whether or not they are going to disavow their colleague for retweeting and amplifying death threats, and why they won't. Liz Cheney is one of the rare Republicans to actually rebuke Paul Gosar, and you saw her not hold back that fire on Ted Cruz. But the loudest voices in the room continue to be people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, and we've seen silence from Republican leadership so far, which really comes across as a direct or tacit support or endorsement of Paul Gosar's behavior and the behavior of this faction of the House Freedom Caucus that is gaining increasing power in the Republican conference.
I think disorienting is the perfect word for it, Ashley. And as I sit here, you know, I've got my colleague Garrett Hake's exchange with Kevin McCarthy, and I've got Speaker Pelosi's comments on how they're going to sort of communicate about the infrastructure bill. And let me start with Pelosi, but I think Jackie's right to sort of hit these sort of two lines of questioning for the two parties, one about extremists within the ranks and the other about legislation. Let me show you Speaker Pelosi first.
Joe Biden is very committed to messaging this. As you see, he's already on the road, been to Baltimore, New Hampshire, Maryland, New Hampshire, Michigan, just in the last few days since the BIF bill was signed, and now to Build Back Better. So I think there's no substitute for the bully pulpit of the President of the United States, especially when reinforced by the events that we will have throughout the country, as well as the mobilization of the grassroots of people who know what this means in their lives. So I think that the, shall we say, the messaging on it will be immediate, and it will be intense, and it will be eloquent, and it will make the difference.
It's the Speaker talking about the messaging on a, by any analysis, transformative piece of legislation, one that Donald Trump sought and failed to achieve for 4 years. Let me show you what the leader of the other party said today to Garrett Hake. This is where his attention is.
Why is it that the only thing Republicans will punish one of their own members for in this Congress is speaking out against Donald Trump?
How is it? I don't understand your question.
The only Republican member who's been in any way punished by the conference this year is Liz Cheney, who lost her role. She lost her role in the Republican conference. I know you were there.
An election. She didn't get punished by that. She lost an election. I'm sorry. People go up for election all the time. There's no basis there.
Why do Republicans not feel compelled to hold any kind of punishment for any of their members on any of these other things which Democrats have been so upset about?
Really? Okay, let's talk about that since you raised the issue. Democrats have been so upset about, were they upset when Maxine Waters told people to get, no, with all due respect, well, thank you for your question. All due respect, I get to answer it, right? In the manner in which I have the right to.
So Kevin McCarthy can't quit lying. He was caught on a hot mic talking to someone at Fox News, I can't remember who, about the need to get rid of Liz Cheney. They whipped votes against Liz Cheney. Kevin McCarthy purged Liz Cheney. That's beyond dispute. Why not own it if it's so popular?
Well, both parties in
very different ways, as Jackie said, have different sorts of messaging problems. And I don't want to imply that they're created equal. But the Democrats have the challenge that, as you said, Biden has passed some legislation that is truly transformative. And there's a central irony there, where if you look at the polling, a lot of his policies and a lot of the things he has passed are quite popular. But he himself and his presidency are not doing particularly well in the polls. And you even showed Leader Pelosi. She referred to the BIS bill. It just sort of doesn't have that pocketbook kitchen table buzz that matters to the voters who Joe Biden said he was elected to serve. So you have Leader Pelosi talking about how they are very concerned that what they really need to do is go out and sell this stuff and explain how the things in the bill, the infrastructure bill that passed, the COVID rescue package that passed, the big social spending bill that looks like it will may pass, how those will actually impact families, what free pre-K-3 would mean, what the childhood tax credit means, what new bridges and roads mean. That's their messaging problem. And then the Republican one is far more simple in some ways, but also complicated, because when they want to talk about Democrats in disarray, that's a favorite Republican talking point, they very fairly get asked, you have a member who put out a video that showed him killing a female Democrat and attacking the President of the United States. That's an incredibly hard thing to try to deal with when you fundamentally, as Kevin McCarthy so far, has refused to condemn that.
Yes. Refused to condemn that. Just as I said. What is going to happen here? We got, there is no way that you can get this zombie-like apocalypse GOP conference to think anything clearly. They've gone so far down the rabbit hole, I don't think it's going to be able to change itself. Normally, you get these things happen in both parties, but not quite as bad. And after a few terms, they're gone. And the Congress and the House is back in session, running the United States government like it should be. But this has not happened. Why hasn't it happened? I have no idea. But it has not happened. And we had that call of last fall, 1471. If you call me back, we get you on the air. If you call me back in another 5 minutes, I got something else to play here. But we saw how the GOP was. We showed how they will back up and start saying things the way they should be saying things. I just don't understand it. Just don't understand it. I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know what else to say. The GOP now. Well, my friend he's supposed to be here this afternoon. That's why, I'm getting off the subject. I don't want to confuse anybody. But yesterday, we had a major problem here. My great-grandson, Blake, but the middle grandson, spends most of the time with me when he's not in school. He got his first certificate to go to high school because he's in the eighth grade. Come around and look at the school you're going to. And it's a Catholic high school. And I asked his mother this morning, I called her up. I said, so how was he going to school today? He said, don't worry about it. You don't have to ask me any questions. I'll tell you everything when I get back. You don't have to ask me. I'm not nervous. Why should I be nervous? Well, when he went home, left here yesterday about 7:30, went out to the store, he bought a new white shirt. I don't know. This is the story. How nervous. I'll see him going on the way here now. So I'll know what the story was. I'll get it out of him. Matter of fact, I'll have him talk on the how his first day. He was shadowing one of the people from the basketball team, I think, because he's going to play basketball there, and he's going to play baseball. So what I would like is just, I can't remember how I was on the first day of high school. I don't remember how I was. I think, well, I never went to the high school because I was in Catholic school and I went to a public school. I don't remember ever having a forecast of shadowing of how school would be. I thought it was so different because my classes were 35 in the class and we were sitting row by row, 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 row right behind one another. I think it was like seven people in a seat, in a row, and it had about seven rows across. Yeah, about 35 people. So, but in high school, you had you don't have that many people in the class, and you have wider spacing, and so it's going to be fun to ask them. Anyway, get back to where we were at here. We talked about Rittenhouse. Now, I was supposed to have a young lady who's running for county commission, and I have not heard from her yet. So we'll go on with the show. Now, we just heard of the GOP, what they thought, and we heard what NTP. Daily was about the Rittenhouse affair. But now, let's hear what the GOP now wants to do. The GOP is the major problem we have. Our president, let's see if I can get him on here. No. How can I get back? Okay, wait. Oh, I got it over. Went too far back. I tried to, President Biden just came out with a statement. So he says, come on. He said, while the verdict at Kenosha will leave many Americans feeling angry and concerned, myself included, we must acknowledge that the jury has spoken. I ran on a promise to bring Americans together because I believe that what unites us is far greater than what divides us. Now, he's absolutely right about that. He also said that I know that we are not going to heal our country's wounds overnight. But I remain steadfast in my commitment to do everything in my power to ensure that every American is treated equally with fairness and dignity under the law. That's what President Biden just released and just said. So, now, some people do believe that the President of the United States should come down because they know he's guilty as hell. Well, I believe he's guilty. I know damn well if that was a black man, he would be in the jail in handcuffs and hopped out to the daggone his feet behind the defense, and probably would have been in prison clothes. You don't have no black man running around with a AR-15 or M-16 or any sort of gun. Now, the family has said this, two families. Today's verdict means there is no accountability for the person who murdered our son. It sends the unacceptable message that armed civilians can show up in any town, incite violence, and then use the danger that they have created to justify shooting people in the street. This is what both the attorney for both the people that were killed just released. Now, I said that in the beginning of the show, that this is going to be nothing but a major problem come the summertime. I do believe that. Wait till the first people are African Americans that show up with AR-15s. You watch these laws change ASAP. You watch, because it's going to happen. It's going to happen. When the just before the Angela Davis and all that group peering and robbing banks and doing all sorts of nonsense, they never had laws that you couldn't carry guns. This is only after the African Americans, Black Panther Party, started carrying guns that this came about, that you couldn't carry a gun. Because everybody could carry a gun, because it was our civil rights. Well, yeah, well, it was your civil rights. Let's see who's
computer,
here.
Are you all, I'm in
6653. Hello. Who's this?
Hey, how are you?
6653. How are you? What can I help you with?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you fine.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
I just had to go in a little area to talk. I have an autistic son, so I move away.
Yes.
From where he's doing.
Go ahead.
So,
All right.
The problems are historic, and genetics is our history, and so are laws and history. Homo sapiens come from Africa, and Aryans went from Iran into the Indus Valley, parts of Pakistan and India, and took skin color bias and created a caste called the Dalits, D-A-L-I-T-S. They're the dark Indians. Alexander the Great conquered Egypt and put in Ptolemy's rule, Ptolemaic kingdom, put whites on top, darks at the bottom. Most of the gods became lighter. Rome took from the Greeks, but the Greeks worshipped Imhotep. The history is that dark humans, Homo sapiens actually, because some humans aren't African, some are from other regions, are the first Homo sapiens, but white Anglo people are benefiting from their parents' genetics, gold and diamonds. And some Anglo people are progressive and liberal, but they also benefit. Us in the Western rich nations aren't trying to be African. We're dressing, and I'm included in some ways, with communicating in the slave town. We're using the slave currency. We can't expect the same system that has oppressed us for longer than 400 years, if you look at Indus Valley and parts of Africa and the conquest of the Olmecs, by using the same banks and linguistics and currency, and then expecting that system that we're giving power to when we play in the NBA and the NFL and the Olympics, and we build up the American currency and the British currency, and when I continue to try to master English language, I'm actually building up the very system that slaps me back. I think it's going to take learning about Kemetic, African, Yoruba, Olmec, our original ancestral languages and spirituality. Not that spirituality, in my opinion, is real in terms of the deities, but it's the myths that our ancestors believed in that we can then comprehend some of their paths, some of the mistakes they made, some of their accomplishments. But I think until then, Kyle and other people will continue to kill dark humans, and we'll continue to request of the same slave system justice and it won't give it to us. And so I think it's a losing battle until we either return to the homeland, Africa, or in the white majority nations, start to put on our Kente cloth and speak Yoruba and Ashanti, et cetera, and use our own black and brown digital currencies and start to learn more about Olegon and Orisha. Not that I believe that they have power in terms of floating around in the sky, but they connect us at least to what our ancestors did and start eating fufu and stop hating each other and loving each other, because I don't think things are going to change otherwise.
Well, that well could be. I'm trying to desperately make a connection to the things that I spoke about today. What, do you have any connection with that?
Well, the connection is that with Kyle, what he did is what a young white guy.
Because he shot white people. He's shooting. Kyle this year shot 2-3 white people.
Yeah, well, it happened on the slave plantations too. Whites were called nigger lovers. And in the like 40s, 50s, if they supported black people. So I think it's all connected. If you support the original Homo sapiens, not humans really, you get a dose of their medicine. And I think some white progressives are learning that the hard way. If we're not aggressive and physical just like the racists, they will continue to shoot and choke and slap and rape, and we'll continue to picket and ask for justice when it might be time to say, you know what, a tit for tat, a tat for tit. You come with a gun, we come with a gun. That may be necessary because I don't think they have the intellectual cognitive abilities to have intelligent, rational conversations about history and calculus and things like that. I think these right-wing folks, the majority are ignorant. And the ones that aren't ignorant are the ones that cash in on the murder and the racism by hedging their bets and by exploiting Haiti and Jamaica and Nigeria and South Africa and the poor hoods of America. How do they exploit? Because they're typically getting the contracts for the new refrigerators and the new fridges, and the paint comes from them. You know, the cycle continues. The grocery stores are either owned by majority corporations or other ethnic groups that are put in the middle so that we get angry at them and they look down on us. It's called salami slicing, where you get the ethnic groups fighting each other instead of looking at the people at the top that are the kingpins.
Mm-hmm.
So my connection to Kyle is
it's a very deep, thoughtful process you went through. And how many people do you think out there understand what you just said?
I think only some understand different parts of it, and the reason is that it's not necessarily their fault. We're taught to stay in certain circles. So some people understand the Rastafarian aspects, but not the Kemetic. The Kemetic people understand that, but not the 5%. And the black Christians understand that dynamic, but not the black Muslim. And so unless we look at the world as it's one world with the Anglo male, has controlled us by knowing all our history and exploiting it, we pick one flag. Hey, I'm this. And don't see the alliances across the border that have some resources that we could use, whether they're physical resources, financial, or cognitive. So, yeah, we have to kind of open our eyes more. That's my thinking. Otherwise,
so how do we open our eyes and get to try to understand what you just said?
Well, I was speaking about this with some other colleagues. I think the first thing to do is to realize that we may disagree on some themes, but the ones we should agree in is that our children shouldn't be exploited. We shouldn't be killed by cops routinely. Kyle and Zimmerman shouldn't be able to go out there and just kill us. That some of us have various resources that others don't have. Maybe we could sit down and talk about it. You have A, I have B, someone else has the farmland, someone else is the stockbroker. If we see those common grounds, which is what the white establishment did when they conquered Africa, when they conquered the Caribbean, they said, look, why are we fighting? Let's not fight each other and work together. They did that hundreds of years ago, but we haven't come to that conclusion. And I think the block is we pick a side. I'm a blood. I'm a Crip. I'm a Catholic. I'm a Jehovah's Witness. I'm straight. I'm gay. I'm trans. This is my thing. Who are you? You're not really black. Black is number 10 on my list. If you're not trans, you're not down. If you're not straight, you're not down. If you're too fat, you're not down. And that's really what it is. It's simple, not seeing the common connections and picking man-made creations.
Well, you know, listen, everything you're saying, you know, I agree with. The browsers, I don't think there's any amount of people that don't even want to think that deep. All they want to do is get up in the morning and go to get some money, make some money, come back and have some food, and go back to sleep. And
yeah.
So how do we get these people to think about this? What mechanism can we use?
Well, there are some that could be successful. One is songs, meaning if we created some of us songs that had some of the unifying, empowering messages, that'd be great. But here's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Will the people play the song? Meaning you can create it when they come. So
yeah.
So your question is
a
very
valid
one. Yeah?
You know, well, it's just like the movie that was out. You know, Build It.
Yeah, Build It.
You
they
build
will come.
It and
yeah,
they'll
baseball.
Come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they may not come.
But they may not come. They
yeah.
came in his story. But
yes, it is.
That
yes.
doesn't mean that's going to happen all the
You're
time.
You're come in yours or mine. We'll be there alone.
Yes,
like,
right.
Wait a minute, what time is it? They should have been here by now.
It's been 40 years. Ain't no way to come
yeah,
yet.
No, 400. Tell our kids.
Right.
They'll be there.
How do we
stay.
Get them to come? So,
I don't know if they're ever coming, brother.
That's right.
I don't know if they're ever coming.
But there has to be something that we can get them to think about that will make them, if they think about it, maybe they'll come. But if they don't think about it, they ain't never going to come.
Well, there is one critical thing, I think, and it's a controversial one, but I think it's the only, you know, the bowling pins when there's one, if you can hit that one, it'll knock down the rest.
Yeah.
And it's one that most of my friends don't want to hear. It's the white Jesus. Because if we could get dark humans to realize that even the Bible itself, the various thousands of versions, describe Jesus as having hair like wool, skin like brass, right? However people want to spin it, that is critical, because then you say, wait a minute, whether or not you believe the deity was a mythological character meant to be a motivating, or whether you believe he existed, isn't the point. The point is, can we gather around that character instead of worshiping the white Jesus? And once we do that, because he's the HNIC in most people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could say, wow, a black Jesus, a brown Jesus, I think that would be pivotal to bringing down a lot of the religious dogma promotes us as inferior when we're the first Homo sapiens and the Bible said, let us make man in our image. Well, that man was
right.
A brother in Africa. I mean, it's just clear. So if we could do that, I think that would be a start of breaking down the mental constructs that oppress, suppress, repress, and oppress our people. And it's subconscious. They don't even realize it. Sigmund Freud, Carl Jung, et cetera, spoke about it. They don't even realize that they're brainwashed often. I have many friends and family that are in the same situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, It seems as though we can go to every family and find brainwashing.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that I went to Catholic school the first 8 years of my life. Then I went to high school. My brother went to Catholic high school after that. But I didn't go. I could have went, but I loved the school I was going to. I saw it was a brand new school. It was only 2 years, Wingate High School in Brooklyn, New York,
mm-hmm.
and represented U.S. schools at the Brussels World's Fair as far as unique look, and it was glass and steel. It didn't look like a prison, which most of the schools back in the 50s looked like, in the 60s. And I wanted to go there. But I always had a brain where I was able to take and understand things are not exactly what are pictured. And that's because the way I was brought up and who taught, my mother taught me, she taught me how to look at television. We had one of the first TV, I had the first TV set I remember in the first grade. I had a TV set, 1947. I wasn't even in the first grade yet. I was about 2 years old, 3 years old. And all the little kids, I remember, used to come over to my house and watch cartoons for 15 minutes. But my mother used to sit and tell me every time there was a commercial, and she was like 20 or 21, she would sit and tell me, look, this is what they're trying to say. I'll never forget the time. Well, I was older. I was about seven. And I was watching Captain Video, Videos Rangers, in the Video Rangers. And I loved Captain Video. And it came to a commercial where it was advertising shredded wheat. You ever hear of shredded wheat?
Oh, yeah.
You're a youngster.
Very good for your health, to help clean out your intestines.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. My brother loves shredded wheat. I couldn't stand it. It tastes like cardboard to me.
Yeah.
So I said, oh, but I wanted this Captain Video would send messages to you but you had to have the Video Ranger ring. And the only way you could do it was to get, it was some kind of shredded wheat. I don't know if it's strawberry shredded wheat or had sprinkles or I don't know what it was now. But I said, boy, my mother said, you know you don't like that. Dennis likes it. And he had that. He just bought him a new box. I said, Ma, I want this. I got to get that ring. She said, look, you're going to get this ring, but you're going to eat that box of cereal. You ain't throwing that cereal out. So I'm telling you, this is nothing but a come on to get you to buy the ring.
To get you to buy the cereal.
Captain Video wouldn't do that to me. He wouldn't do that to me.
He loved you.
She said, yes. Yeah. So she said, all right, good. Went out to the grocery store, bought it. I tell you, I got the Video Ranger ring, and the first message in it was, this is a secret message from Captain Video. Make sure you eat all your shredded wheat.
Otherwise, the captain
and
knew your mom wouldn't buy more.
I said, Ma, look what it said there. She said, well, what do you expect it to say? I told you it was going to say that. You don't want it. She said, you don't want this. But you're going to eat every last bit of it. And I had to eat every last bit of it. I'm telling you, I was so damn mad. Captain Video. Boy, I said, how can I send him? He sold me out, this son of a bitch. So anyway, the thing is that, and my mother used to say in front of me, when all the commercials were on TV, she said, look, let me tell you something, why they got these commercials. She said, because they're trying to sell the program, but they're really trying to sell what they're selling on the program, these commercials. This is most important. So I said, but don't they want people to watch the program? They don't care about the program. It could be any program. They want to sell you something. That's all it is. So she used to tell me all about explain to me the different commercials, why they were doing it. And I grew up, and my mother was the first black theatrical agent in New York City.
Mm.
The first one. And I was fascinated by everything that I learned when I was a kid about advertising and what makes people get in a position that they can sell you stuff because mm-hmm. they get to know what your weakness is.
Mm-hmm.
What did this person want? And they keep throwing stuff at you until they find out what you like. And then they'll feed you that till it comes down out of your eyes. My mother used to do it because I loved the spinach when I first had it. And she said, oh, you like spinach? I had spinach for
breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Lunch and dinner every day. Yeah. I said, you know, I was so damn sick and tired of spinach. I haven't eaten spinach. I haven't eaten spinach today. To this date, I'm 76. I had it for 10 years. And I'm telling you, so this, when people understand what you have that they can get a hold of, they will use it. How can we get a hold of these people to get them to understand what they don't have and what you have just presented?
By the way, your mother was a special lady because at age 21, if she had that type of understanding before tens of years of
Absolutely.
The public finally realizing what advertising is doing, she was ahead of her time. Plus, she
Absolutely.
Set history in
oh,
the entertainment
was.
Industry.
Oh,
yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely without doubt. Absolutely
yeah.
without doubt.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to get in this business of television or radio or movies.
Yeah.
We made a movie back in 1958 called Odds Against Tomorrow. Harry Bell finally was in it, Robert Ryan was in it, Shelley Winters had a bunch of stars, a lot of stars. And movies were Hurry Up and Wait. That's all it was, Hurry Up and Wait. Hurry Up. I had 2 weeks off from school, still had to do homework and everything. But, hey, it was Hurry Up and Wait. And I said, nah, I don't want to be involved in this. But you see, hey, years later, I got involved in this. One thing leads to another. Oh, I know how to do that. I did that for years. So the thing is, it comes back to you. But the thing, how do we get, because I have been thinking about how can we get people to understand what they're missing, what they don't know. You know the old saying, you don't know what you don't know? Well, these people don't
yeah.
know that they don't know. They don't know what
yeah.
they don't know.
It's ignorance. Well, I don't think most people over age 30 are not going to change. The real change is going to have to come
right.
from young people.
They're lost.
They're lost. Most.
Absolutely.
Like, I've been on a certain path my entire life from age 12. You probably have also from a young age. You knew some things were wrong and you took another path. If we could reach kids between ages maybe 1, 2, and up to maybe 17, 18, but that is where the school system has them and other institutions, and the school systems perpetuate white supremacy and dogma and capitalism, pure capitalism.
Yeah, but
you know, I
understand that. I understand that. But the problem is I don't think the schools is what's doing it. It's the family. Because if you don't have a family that leads you around the right line, the correct path, I don't care what they're saying in school.
Well, let me tell you
I've
worked in the school system, in a vice principal in a separate type of school. And so we're going to have a great conversation, because what I found was that
mm-hmm.
when I was in school as a student now, I was a stellar student,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't fit the system what they wanted. They wanted the white student to be the number one, so they pushed him. They never sat with me about college, et cetera, right? Even though I kicked his butt in many of the tests. Then when I went back to the school in New York and I told them of my accomplishments in various fields, I said, I want to talk to your kids because I hear many of them are throwing teachers out windows, et cetera. They never even returned the call, and I tried multiple times. I had another experience in a New Jersey school, a more affluent neighborhood, where the reverse was the case. The kids were very financially, their parents were very solvent, but the kids
mm-hmm.
had the same problem, meaning conditioning to be a certain way, to have a certain hairstyle, to wear certain clothes, to have a certain Mercedes, etc. And then when I became an educator officially, both as teacher and later as vice principal and principal, I found the same patterns, trying to make changes from the Board of Education level, from the teachers' union level, et cetera. Things are structured. And by the way, I was principal and vice principal in much smaller schools, but they still had to interact with systemic forces when it came to lesson plan, curriculum, et cetera. The same powers that be were in place when it came to what books were being utilized, when it came to the lesson plans, when it came to testing, And so my experience has been that the school helps to perpetuate the racism and the sexism and the dogma and the hate that children experience. If I had to choose between good families and good schools, I would choose good schools. Because a child could come from a single-parent home, a child could come from the projects, a child could come from a home where the father's in jail and the mother sells a butt. But that child, if it has the right schooling, can go home and be the next Martin Luther King or whatever hero we think of. However, I'm not arguing that families aren't important. I'm just saying that school is actually the place where indoctrination and teaching occurs generally. Unless the parent is
okay,
like
your mom. All right, I agree with that. But yeah. You know, the thing is though, I agree with that, and I tell you what, I did not know about the schools until about 2000, because I wanted to get involved in my youngest daughter's schooling, and I went to the school down here in Charlotte, and the principal was an art school, so they had music and they had all the other stuff, artists and everything else. And I was talking to the principal. I told him we were talking about different things, and, you know, that I was involved in that. I've been all through entertainment and whatnot. I was sitting on strippers' laps, and when my mother, when I was 5 years old, my mother used to book nightclubs with comedians and strippers and song and dance men, you know. And so I knew all about that. So he said, so we got very close. He said, look, you can come in as a parent and create a class, and I would okay it, because he was ahead of all performing arts schools in the Charlotte area. And I said, well, I don't know about that. He said, well, you don't have to know anything about it. He said, but you could create it and look, give it to me. I'll okay it. I'll look at it and okay it. So I created a class. It's called the media literacy, where you have to understand what's being presented to you. So I took everything that my mother taught me about listening to what the dialogue says in the music, in the movie, in the play, in the song, and what does it really mean? Mm-hmm. And I would do that with film. I would do film presentations of different films, but we would have to completely dissect the film, the structure, and the language that was used. What were they really trying to tell you? And it went over so well, I had one class 1 year. The next year I had two classes, because I had to double up on the one that I did, and I had to go back and do the one that I originated, because there was other kids that wanted to come in. So I was, at the end of 1999, I was doing four classes a day. So the thing is that people need to understand what is being presented to them. They need to understand that because this person says it's blue, is it really blue? Or are they telling you that it's blue because you don't know what color is? And there's a lot of problem we have with kids who I see with my grandson. My youngest grandson, especially, he goes to Catholic school now. And the things that I want to tell him about his class, he says, oh, no, we don't need to learn that. We don't need to learn that. I said, why don't you need to learn that? He says, because the teacher said so. I said, yes, but I want you to understand the ins and out of it, not just that one and one is two. Why is one and one is two is the point I want to get across to you. So the thing is, today they have so many things that they not only have to learn what I learned, they have to learn what I learned plus everything that came after me in the same amount of time. Plus they have more classes, plus now they have computers, which takes away from the classes, because now they don't need to learn how to write. All you know how is to operate the computer system, and it will automatically self-correct any written word that's wrong. So there's a lot of things they're not learning now that they had, we had to learn when I was growing up. And the problem is that good or is that bad?
It's two things. Computers and technology do provide humanity with the opportunity to have extensions of ourselves that are physical or software to enhance what we do. The problem is that's not what's happening. Computers are being utilized to extract the resources from the planet and to make people lazy. So there's a good part and a bad part, but the bad part outweighs the good part because the bad part is what makes other people powerful. I think that if we were to, because I am involved in technology in various ways, if we were to look at computers as aids for humans, not to replace us, not to have all the jobs going to robots and to AI, that would be great. So I think that the schools are not doing what you're suggesting and some of us are suggesting, which is ensuring that children have foundations, whether or not they have electricity. You should be able to walk in a park and do certain calculations, but that is not what the system really wants. It wants us dependent on computers because the people that control the computers and the subroutines actually would then control you. You need the electricity. You don't do the – Google just – not just – over the past few months has fired some black programs. It's been in some of the media because some of them said, listen, some of the programming is racist and sexist, but also we don't have enough people that look like me here. And instead of taking that as feedback that's critical and that could benefit the company, they fired them. So, yeah, technology is not being utilized. It's like anything. You have a knife. A knife could be used to, you know, slice a banana, to cut down a tree, to help build a home, or it could be used to cut someone's throat. And technology is being used to cut the throat of primarily darker humans, but also even poorer white people. But they're at a higher level in the caste system, so they don't feel it as much. They only feel it when it affects them, and then many of them, you know, are galvanized and call on Martin Luther King, but not really to help Martin Luther King or to help us, to help themselves. Everybody, well, using black people. The trans community is like, yes, oh, human rights, and then they go after Dave Chappelle.
Well, that's true. That's true. That's absolutely true. Well, you know, well, Dave Chappelle was he right or was he wrong?
Oh, he was right. One, he's a comedian, stand-up comedian, and comedians have the ability to tell us jokes about things that we don't usually talk about. It's different from what the guy from Seinfeld did when he said, "We used to lynch you niggas." Remember when he did that? That was different. He went out of the comedy routine and attacked someone in the audience with some racism. Whereas Dave was simply making some observations about the trans community. So now what's happened is the trans community, which are marginalized like black people, they're so powerful that you can't even critique them. Because if you critique them, all of a sudden you're transphobic.
Well, yes. The thing is, though, comedy has got to be in a different area. It can't be in the same thing that we talk about every day. When you're speaking about comedy, it should be funny. It should be made to be funny. Things about it should be funny. The problem is everybody, they'll say, well, you can't take a joke. No, yes, that's right. You can't take a joke when it's about you. There are a lot. I mean, that was the thing about when we were growing up. You know, you go, well, look at you. You got baggy pants on. You got a beard that's scraggly. They talk about you like a dog. But maybe they were kidding, and that's the only way they know how to get a hold of you. Maybe they were kidding. But a lot of things I don't think when they're kidding, we should understand when someone's kidding. And why we don't understand it, and those same people who don't understand it will go tell a joke about you in a micro minute.
Yeah.
That's what's
bad. There's a big difference between bullying and a joke that is a critical analysis.
Absolutely.
There's a big
right.
difference.
Absolutely.
And Yeah. The trans community is losing a lot of allies, including me, because I'm a straight guy, and I once said, you know, leave the trans people alone, but they're not standing up for me and my people, so I'm now like, well, how am I going to stand up for you when you're then going to hit us over the head? I can't stand for you anymore. I'm going to stand for me. It's self-preservation. So, yeah, they I don't think they care, but, yeah, they're losing allies. But don't forget, they're losing
I grew up, because my mother had plenty of trans homosexuals in the entertainment. And I had one at my graduation party. I had a trans stripper at my graduation party, and I didn't tell anybody. Only my girlfriend, myself, no one else knew. And when he took off all his clothes, there was a hush in the room.
Remember that song?
They did not believe it. They couldn't believe it. Yes.
All over the world.
There was a hush. And they, you know, 5 minutes later, there was still a hush. And then he started applauding. He wasn't even there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people are shocked when people get shocked when they don't expect it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they didn't go ballistic. Now, you couldn't do that today.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't do that today and not tell people. You just couldn't do it. It's not the same atmosphere. And I had about 60 people there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was my first year in college. It was my first year. Nurses from Bethel Nurses College and the Academy of Aeronautics, which is now Brooklyn, part of Brooklyn College out there, is LaGuardia College.
Okay.
Anyway, we had about 60 people. So the thing is that there are certain things that, now, maybe that's just because those were people that I knew and I knew how they were. So that's why I didn't pick people off the street to come in. So mm-hmm. maybe that's why that ended like that. So you always know how your friends will react on certain things, okay? So I didn't know all these girls. I didn't know the girls. But I knew the guys.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that the girls were shocked too. But they started applauding afterwards. So there are certain things that we have to understand in life, and one of them is comedy. Mm-hmm. We cannot be distracted by what is said in comedy. That has mm-hmm. to be the secret room
the unholy grail.
That's open area. Right. Right. It yeah. has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be. But mm-hmm. when we have what we have today, it's gone off the deep rails because of the person who was in office 2 years ago. Completely destroyed mostly how we think, because a lot of these people were already there, but they were hidden in the crevices, and we never would have heard of them. This is this person that was president of the United States, this orange man who was in the White House, brought the roaches out of the crevice. And there's not a lot of roaches, but these roaches make a lot of noise. That's the only difference today. That's what I feel. That's one of the major, let me put it this way, it's one of the major differences today.
Well, I think of Trump, but like Hitler, if Hitler were not born, would Nazi Germany have had still risen? And I think it would have. And same thing, I think, in America. I think even without Trump, a lot of Anglo light-skinned Americans were at the point where they felt the need to, black folks were getting a bit out of pocket in their minds. And so if it hadn't been Trump, it would have been Rudy Giuliani. I don't know if you heard of him. Yeah. He's another Trump.
Oh, I know. I'm from New York.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that societies tend to have leaders that represent the society. It's rare that one person can just kick everybody in the head, tens of thousands of people, and say, look, I am in charge. You will listen to me, you know. Usually what happens is if they are in charge, the people decided, you know what, yeah, let that person do their thing. And Trump is that one, and Giuliani, and Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Hitler, and all of them. They come to power. Not that
well,
the Democratic leaders are that much better.
I don't think Giuliani would have been in charge or anything. Giuliani was a dummy. I mean, even the mafia said that he was a dummy. He got most of his charges when he charged the mafia. Most of them were dropped because they were bogus charges. Bogus. So the thing is that. What do we do? Who would have taken his place? Then it would have been somebody that we don't know if it would have happened. There's always something that kicks off somebody like Trump. I don't say Trump because his real name is Trump. They changed it. And Drump, that's his real name. Anyway, the thing is, you have a virus, you contact a virus, that doesn't mean you're going to get sick. It's just that your system was run down and it didn't have enough defense mechanisms to fight the virus invading you. That's why you got sick. There's always going to be something that's going to kick off something in somebody to make this person try to do something like this. And We now see how much the laws and our Constitution is weak in so many areas. But it's not weak. The problem is that back in the days when it was created, the people didn't think like this. So, but we have what they call an elastic clause in the Constitution, where we're supposed to be able to change laws as the years go on that show that it's relevant to change. And that's what we need to do.
Yes, and there's also the spirit of the law. The letter of the law says one thing, but when Anglo-Americans want something done or when a group that has certain power and privileges want something done, the law doesn't matter. Things get done. And,
that's right.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Things
we think,
done.
Hey, the law says this.
Yes.
And Well, 40 acres
right,
and
right,
a mule,
right.
You know, all kinds of stuff. But I don't know about your mule, but I haven't gotten mine. So.
No, I haven't got the mule. I haven't got the mule yet. I've been looking out the window every day for a mule.
Amazon.
Well, that's true. We can get a mule from Amazon.
Yeah,
I'm sure positive of that.
Yeah, they can deliver anything.
They'll deliver it the next day.
Yeah.
So the thing is that what you have brought up all comes back around to how can we get people to start believing that there's more to it than just what they're doing now.
Yeah, it's tough. Because you have a great show, but I used to do shows also, and I just got kind of tired of investing so much quality time researching, analyzing, producing shows, and the response was dismal.
Yeah.
You know, it's very difficult because most adults have been conditioned. I'm reiterating, but I think really the solution is children. That's why I'm working on a few projects that have to do with educating children through entertainment. Because often, for instance, in my case, my parents were involved in a certain religious cult, and my siblings, had a very different, in most cases, thinking in politics, religion, as me. So other kids could be in the same situation. The parents are already conditioned to think a certain way, but the children are taught through songs or dances or videos or after-school programs, critical thinking and real history. And they could be taught, which is what I tell some young people, that if adults were doing the right thing, the world wouldn't be in the messed up situation that it is. So clearly us, the adults, most of us are not succeeding.
Absolutely. Well, as I told you, well, I created this course called Media Literacy, and it was critical thinking, critical reading, and critical looking. You have to look and see what is actually there. Because if someone tells you the sky is blue and it's actually gray or brown or black, you got to be able to understand that. You got to be able to understand that. And it is also critical listening. You got to be able to listen. Because one of the most important things that most kids have not learned, and I happened to grow up on the years when radio was going out, because it was all television. But I was there still. I remember coming home for lunch sometime, and my grandmother was listening to the radio, her stories. Well, now they got all those stories on TV. But understanding, you got to be understand that. I remember the Lone Ranger. One time, and this is on the radio, I listened to the Lone Ranger, and I was 2 years old, and the Lone Ranger, they would almost spell out everything. You could see all the words in your mind. He would tell Tom, I'm going over to the window here to see if I can see the sheriff coming. And you hear the click, 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 him walking over to the window. So this is critical listening. With TV, radio, TV and movies now, there's no more critical listening. It's critical viewing. And you don't understand. You only understand half as much. You understand half as much through critical viewing than you do through critical listening. And people need to people need to go back and listen to radio broadcasts so they can understand and view. There used to be Dragnet on the radio. There was all the westerns were on the radio. Comedy was on the radio. I mean, science fiction was on the radio, and you had to be able to picture what they were saying in their mind. So their descriptions of what was going on had to be almost twice as good as what you see in the movies or TV now, because you have to see what you're looking at and understand what you're looking at.
You have to have a vocabulary. Lexicon.
As Trump says, are you listening to me? Are you listening to what I am saying? Or are your eyes completely blurred? Listen to me. Just look at what I'm showing to you. And then if you look and then you listen to what he says, they're two different things.
Yeah.
You got to be able to understand what people are saying and then look at what they're saying. And then you'll understand that's what they're actually saying.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was a master showman, like a circus, guy in the circus that got the lions.
Yeah, Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey.
Yeah. Or Universal Circus, yeah.
That's right. Well, Barnum and Bailey was the first one in early 1900s, and he says, "I don't want people to list. I want people to look at everything I say because it's just like the man with the who does the magician.
Yeah.
Are you looking
sleight
in the direction
hand.
He's pointing you to look at, or the sleight of hand? That's right.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know, and this is what we have to know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my 2 hours up, and I spent it all with you, and it was fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I hope you keep my number handy so that we can communicate maybe offline for
Well, hey, sure. you have my number there, right? The 646 number. 646-716-5242. That's true. I'll give you blog
talk. Yeah, I'll call and you won't be there. I'll say, hello. They came. I built it and they didn't come. Like, what is going on? We just spoke about this, brother. I'm disappointed. Are you listening to me?
I got your number. I will text you my number.
Okay.
Because I got your number.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. I appreciate the communication. Thank you so much.
I will do that. But it was great talking to you. And because a lot of times I talk to people on the show here. After 2 minutes, I say, yeah, okay, good. Thanks for calling. Call me back. Yeah, I don't want to say don't call me back, but call me back. I got your number. Next time you call, I won't answer.
Appreciate it. I had a pleasure. You're a few months, years older than me, but I think that you're like an uncle as I'm talking. I think there's some great things. And I have a history that, you know, is really intriguing when you hear it offline. You'll say, oh, that's why you understand A, B, C, and D. So, yeah.
Okay, all right. Very good.
Thank you.
All right. What's your first name?
Hotep on the radio. H-O-T-E-P. It's
Hotep
an Egyptian phonetic term. That means, Hotep when I'm on the radio. Yeah. Oh.
Oh, Hotep on the radio.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm putting that down. That's what I'm going to call you when I call you.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Call me for sure. I'd like
great.
To fill you in on some new positive
I will.
Ventures.
I'll call you today.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you for
I
your time.
I believe that. Thank you very much. And ladies and gentlemen, it's been a great deal to have you guys listen today, although we did not get into what I had planned to because before the this Rittenhouse affair, I had to change the whole show, and it is so sad. I didn't want to talk about it, so I'm glad the Hotep on the radio gave us a call. And we're going to get out of here. We're going to listen to a little bit of Lisa Franklin before I get out of here. I had a dream. As she said.
I love it. summer.